The year is 2005. Brian Scalabrine becomes a Celtic. That's fun. The Boston Celtics take part in the biggest trade of all time. And a little website called RedsArmy.com is born. It's the Wednesday Locked On Celtics. Millie, let's go. Rain and Jay's back with the vengeance back. All the real Celtics fans in attendance. This the truth like 34. This like walking in the garden when you hear the roars. Crowd goes crazy, most in-depth coverage on the daily, mainly podcast royalty, the content kings. When you talking about the franchise with 17 rings, focus like Danny at the deadline, global but it got a local feel like the red line, the blue line, the green line, play it in between time. I'ma throw my C's jersey on in the meantime and press play. When the F's done, I can't wait until the next day, trying to stay in tune with the C's, it's the best way. Melly. John Corrales here of MassLive.com saying once again, thank you for making this show part of your daily routine. Really do love that you're sticking with this show throughout all of this. There's a lot that's going on out there. Your lives have been disrupted and you're still listening to this podcast, which is amazing to me. So thank you. Really am thrilled to continue to bring you these deep dives. Today we're getting into the 2005-2006 season. And this entire podcast is going to be basically before 2005-2006. It's wild because so much happens. This podcast is brought to you by Built Bar. Go to BuiltBar.com. You're going to get $5 off each box of Built Bars that you buy. It's the most delicious protein bar on the market. You're going to get $10 off with the promo code Locked On. So go get that $10 off your first order and get $5 off each box all week long using the promo code Locked On. So as I said, I just want to dive right into it. Chuck McKinney, Mike Dinan, RedsArmy.com, join me again to start this discussion. We're going to start with Brian Scalabrine. And I focus a lot of time on Scal, not because he's an important part of any sort of success that the Celtics have had, but we love Scal. Scal is like this big figure now in Boston Celtics history, and we watch him now, and most people love him. And if you love Scal, maybe you don't know the backstory. He has an interesting story back in 2005. So we focus a lot on that to start. Back here with Chuck and Mike from Reds Army. Chuck McKinney at Reds Army underscore Chuck. Mike is Mike Dinan at Mike Dinan. Both on Twitter. Both fine, upstanding gentlemen. How you guys doing?
Fantastic. Always a pleasure.
Yeah. All good.
So when we last finished speaking, we were at 2005. Paul Pierce was doing his stupid meltdown after the Indiana Pacers with that gauze around his face, the most ridiculous thing. But we have determined now, as we pick up the story, that Pierce and Doc have had their come to Jesus. Pierce has decided that he wants to commit to the Celtics. He wants this Celtics team to be built around him. He wants to win a title in Boston. So, 2005, Danny Ainge gets to work on that. First off, I forget what order this goes in, but really two monumental things happened in August of 2005. First of all, I'll just start with this. August 2nd, 2005, he signs Brian Scalabrine as a free agent.
Whoa!
It's a big deal. But this is really a big deal because it's like a 5-year, $15 million contract for Brian Scalabrine. I want to make sure I bring this up kind of facetiously, guys, but we really kind of need to go through the history of Brian Scalabrine a little bit, because to a lot of fans, Scal is just Scal. Scal is a celebrity. You walk around with Brian Scalabrine now around the garden, everybody wants a piece of Scal. But in 2005, when he was signed as a free agent and he was given 5 years, $15 million, there was a whole lot of what going on. And he was getting booed because the whole point of signing Brian Scalabrine back then was he was supposed to help. He had benefited maybe more than anybody. He probably owes Jason Kidd about half that $15 million at least for making him look good enough for Danny Ainge to go like, hey, maybe this guy could help us.
I thought exactly the same thing when he signed. Jason Kidd made him and got him the big money. And little did we know at the time that Scal would become a folk hero like he has.
Yeah, you know, I completely erased this from my memory, this whole 5-year contract, $3 million. I mean, talk about just a disgusting overpay. I mean, we can celebrate Scal for who he is and what he's become, but this salary and this contract at this time in the franchise, it doesn't make any sense. It doesn't make any sense. I mean, $3 million at that time is not a lot of money. But when you just look at who Scal was, the money he was making, I mean, that this is like triple. This was three times his existing salary. And I don't think, if you look at his numbers, I know you're talking about Jason Kidd making him, but it's not like he had any sort of breakout season when you look at the numbers he was putting up. So I'm a little perplexed as to what Ainge was thinking.
If I recall correctly, he had some big moments in the playoffs where I'm just looking at his game log, and I recall that so we had that series the Nets got swept in 2005, but he came in and hit a bunch of threes in one of those games, and I want to say that in another playoffs he had like he came in and stepped up or hit a bunch of threes or something. Let's see. Ah, here it is. 2004. They ended up losing to Detroit, but he had a big 17 point game where he was 4-4 from three. Like Scal would have these occasional like big bursts from three with just spotting up when Jason Kidd drove. They didn't happen very often. And
no, they did not.
No. But I think when Danny Ainge saw him, he was like, here's a forward who can hit threes. Like, as Ainge is kind of looking ahead and thinking, like, big guys who space, he probably thought that Scal at the time could have developed into more of a guy that could space the floor, I'm guessing.
Yeah, I think what Chuck is saying, though, is Scal, as you just said, John, had maybe a couple of good outings, right?
Yeah.
And then somehow out of that, he's set for life.
Yeah.
Right? And when does that ever happen? How do you get that deal? I mean, I love Scal. No axe to grind at all. But no. Yeah, it was another decision, as you could make the case, another decision that you have to scratch your head.
Here's the Celtic salaries in 2005, 2006. Pierce is making just about $14 million. Rafe LaFrance is making $10.5 million. Ricky Davis is making about $6 million. Mark Blunt's making $5.5 million. Vin Baker, $5.3 million. And then Scal at just about $2.6 million. Then behind him is Dan Dickow, Curtis Borchardt, who I forgot, Marcus Banks, Al Jefferson, Gerald Green. These are rookies now that are making money. So Scal is the sixth highest paid player on the team. But
that's just embarrassing.
Right. But I mean, again, this team, this 2005-2006 team is bad. And it's not even really worth discussing much of the season. Because, again, the names that I just rattled off, Pierce, LaFrance, Ricky Davis, Mark Blunt, Vin Baker, Scal, Dan Dickow. I mean, this is just a mess of a team. But that's, you know, Scal kind of worked his way in. And again, though, Scal, when he got to Boston, was seen as a guy like I said, people were wondering why he got so much money. The salary cap back then, $49.5 million. So $2.5 million is 5% of the cap. Like it's not nothing. It's not like it's a throwaway. It's not like a veteran minimum. It's back then a decent amount of money. And in his numbers, as we can tell, are not great. When he first got to Boston, he, let's see, 2.9 points per game after signing that deal, shot
35.5% from three, but only took like one, not even like 1.2 point threes per game. He only played 13 minutes a game. So it was very obvious back then that it was like, oops, this was a mistake.
You know, you're absolutely right. And it's only further cemented when, you know, Scal stuck around when the roster turned over, and he still wasn't much of a productive player. So even in 08 and 09, I mean, his biggest moments came, you know, in garbage time and in, you know, his sort of notorious post-game press conference.
That was fun.
Right. So it was fun. Right. So, even when the team was stacked and Scal could be that role player that Ainge envisioned him, he wasn't. So, you know, I think the point of the moral of the story is this was a horrible signing by Ainge. And it was just the team this year, you're right. I mean, when you look at that mix of players, I mean, it really was about seeing what Al could be, seeing what Gerald Green could be, you know, hoping Marcus Banks could become a player, Tony Allen's emergence, right? So that's what it was about. It was more about that than trying to get anything out of guys like LaFrentz or Zerbiak or Ricky Davis, right?
Right. And the whole thing with bringing Scal in, I remember having some of these discussions like, well, they didn't sign him to be a main guy. And yet here he is. He's there. We started to look at him as like, well, why can't he do more? Because it was pretty obvious at the time. And now, so Scal over the course of time, now, remember we're starting with this 2005-2006 season. Eventually people realize like Scal's not great. As far as NBA player goes, once he settled into a role as a victory cigar, like he made this like metamorphosis where it was, wow, we're paying this guy too much money to, wow, it doesn't matter that we're paying this guy this, whatever amount of money he's making because the team is good. And now he's just at the end of the bench and it doesn't, who cares what he makes. Once he became the victory cigar, then the fans started to kind of embrace him. But he also didn't embrace that very, very much at first. Like, he didn't like that role. It took Scal embracing that moment, embracing that role to get to where we are today with Brian Scalabrine.
More on Scal and the birth of RedsArmy.com in just a second. A few of you reached out to me to tell me how much you love the Built Bars that you've bought. You may want to be buying them again. I just placed an order on Monday. I took advantage of that free Built Boost energy drink. I'm getting myself a bag of that because that stuff's good too. But I got $5 off each box and I restocked myself. And so you can do that too if you have already bought them. $5 off each box of Built Bars. They're the most delicious protein bars on the market. Covered in 100% chocolate. They taste like a candy bar. There are all sorts of flavors, fruity flavors, chocolatey flavors, whatever you want. If you have a nut allergy, there are nut-free options. They're gluten-free. If you have a gluten sensitivity, there's something for everybody. Go and check the label. I guarantee you, you're going to like what you see. You're going to go find all the protein that you want, 15 to 20 grams of protein, calories all right underneath 200 calories per bar, none of the extra sugar, none of the extra carbs. Go to BuiltBar.com, use the promo code LOCKEDON, get yourself a box, and you'll see what I'm talking about. If you don't want to do that yet, go to BuiltBar.com and check out the labels. Check out the competition. They've got the competitors' labels up there. That's how confident they are. What site puts the competition's labels on their site so you can compare it yourself? Go to BuiltBar.com. Promo code is locked on. All this week you're getting $5 off each box you buy. And with the promo code locked on, you get $10 off your first order.
You are Locked On Celtics, your daily Boston Celtics podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network.
He now is fairly beloved, I'd say, among Celtics fans. Like, he's just Scal. People love him. And I think he does a good job on the broadcast. None of that stuff happens without him just embracing the moment and leaning into like, hey, this is what it is. And I'm just going to I'm set for life, and I've just got to embrace the fact that my NBA career probably, you know, went 4 years longer than it probably could have or should have because of all of this. So that's the little Brian Scalabrine bit. It's I think it's just interesting to note because at the beginning that he was booed. Remember they call him Veal? Like it was like instead of Veal Scalapini, they call him Veal Scalabrine.
I do recall that.
That was his Nets nickname, but he dropped that. I think he probably begged people to drop it when he got here.
Well, he came up with the White Mamba as like the joke, like, well, if Kobe's the Black Mamba, I'm the White Mamba. And it was just so tongue in cheek that people were like, ha, yes, I love it. And it stuck. Like he made that stick, but Veal was his nickname for a while. I know he didn't like that. I know he hated that.
So what else, John, happened on August 2nd, 2005?
Oh, funny that you should ask. The Boston Celtics participated in the biggest trade in NBA history. Five teams, 13 players. Here's the rundown. Miami Heat got Antoine Walker from the Celtics, Jason Williams, James Posey, Andre Emmett from the Memphis Grizzlies, and the draft rights to some guy that we've never heard of. Eddie Jones went to Memphis. Rasul Butler went to New Orleans. Let's see, draft picks, who cares? Quintel Woods went to Boston. I don't remember Quintel Woods. He didn't play, did he? Oh, let me finish this up. The Jazz got Greg Ostertag. Boston got Curtis Borchardt, who I mentioned before, and Raul Lopez from Memphis, and New Orleans got Kirk Snyder from Utah. Chuck, you want to read that back to me?
I'm trying to absorb. What did Boston get in return aside from Borchardt?
Not too much.
No, not too much. They got. Let's see. Let me see. They got Borchardt, Quintel Woods, and the
2008
draft
second round pick.
Yeah, like it's just really, I don't. Yeah, it's so hard to follow exactly. I don't remember the Celtics got much. Like I think the Celtics just participated to get Antoine Walker out again. So if you remember, the Celtics traded Antoine Walker, reacquired him, and now have traded him a second time after he came in and wore number 88 for a little while.
And this was a great – this turned out to be a good move for Antoine, right? Because he goes to Miami.
Gets a title.
He contributes. He contributes to that Heat team. That's the Dwayne Wade Shaq championship team, right, in Miami?
Yeah.
2006?
Yes.
Yeah. So,
yeah, yeah,
so
yeah.
And he played a pretty good role on that team. So it worked out for him. You know, I'm not sure if he had any visions of sticking around in Boston the second time, but I think from Antoine's perspective, he was happy because he knew what was going on in Boston.
Yeah, and I recall that he had like a pretty good attitude about it because he knew that he was just passing through this time. And from what I remember of those interviews back then, he just kind of like, yeah, man, whatever. Like it's just fun to be back and whatever. So. Yeah, it worked out. It did work out well for him. Aside from him losing all of his money.
Right, right.
Which, to his credit, now he has taken full responsibility for it. He's explained how easily that happens. You know, we can look at Antoine making whatever he made over the course of his career, whatever, $100 million. That number is $100 million. But as I always say, and this is not to like make people cry for millionaires, but $100 million, by the time you take the taxes and everybody's cut out of it, it's really like 50-something million dollars. And then Antoine, you know, lived a lavish lifestyle, so he blew a lot of it and supported a lot of people that he probably shouldn't have. So he blew all of it. The good thing about that is then he becomes a cautionary tale, and he has worked with the NBA. I think he might still work with the NBA to kind of caution these rookies and say, hey, by the way, this money that you think you're getting is not really what you're getting. Here's where it all goes, and here's how it goes quickly, to try and teach these guys to at least be somewhat judicious with their spending.
Yeah, yeah, and I give him credit for that because it's not it's very humbling, and he could want to just kind of curl up and hide and not be seen from, but he's like you said, he's a sort of embraced that part of it. So that's good to see. So this is another one of those seasons where it seems like the off season or the trade deadline moves overshadow, the on the court product, right? Because of what Ainge is trying to build, we were all focused on, how he's shaping the roster. And like I said before, it was about seeing some of the younger players, hoping that they'll develop quickly before Paul Pierce is old and gray and can't be the number one option on this team anymore.
In basketball terms, Antoine got out of town just at the right time. Not only did he go on to win a title in Miami, the Celtics faded back, only won 33, lost 49, didn't make the playoffs. And only Pierce really stood out. He averaged 26.8, shooting 47%. And besides him, he had Ricky Davis, who averaged almost 20, and Wally Szczerbiak, who averaged 17. So Pierce was carrying the load. This is going to be the story for this season and the season after.
Follow us on our social channels at LO Celtics on Twitter and at Locked On Celtics on Instagram.
The Wally Szczerbiak trade happened in 2006. There's one more major event in 2005 that happened. I don't know if either of you can guess what happened on December 4th, 2005.
No, I have to look it up. December 4th, 2005. Now I'm drawing a blank.
Totally drawing a blank. December 4th, 2005 is the birth of RedsArmy.com.
Oh. How could I forget?
Huge. This tells you how stupid we are. We started a blog before one of the most forgettable seasons in Celtics history. We came in 2005. We're like, yeah, let's talk about a team no one gives a shit about. We registered this site December 4th, 2005, after conceptualizing it in the overnight news shift at WBZ in Boston, during which we obviously very much concentrated on producing high quality newscasts from 5 to 7 a.m. every morning.
Chuck, hey. I can't believe that you didn't remember that.
It's all fun.
I can't believe it.
You know, I mean, now that I'm this big time blogger, it's hard to remember certain things. It's hard to remember all the little details. I'm just trying to think of what was it? What fueled it? Was it arrogance to think that we people would want to hear our witty commentary?
I don't know. All I remember is reading Boston Dirt Dogs, which is it was, for people who don't know, basically a Red Sox blog. It became the Boston.com Red Sox blog, but it was this funny, irreverent blog that looked at the Red Sox. It was just like Photoshops and just a fun, super fun way. Like, we read that religiously, I recall.
Yeah.
And I just remember saying that, like, just talking to you and saying, like, we should do this for the Celtics. Like, early RedsArmy.com was just basically mimicking Boston Dirt Dogs with, like, I was heavy on the Photoshops. I Photoshopped everything. And we just goofed around. Like, we weren't doing, like, serious pieces. Like, now on Red's Army, you can have like a serious piece. You can have like real kind of like writing that kind of looks more traditional. But for the first few years, it was just nothing but Photoshops and just goofy stuff and just a place where fans could just goof around.
Yeah, you know, it was pre-Twitter, so you had to go to blogs to get takes and stuff like that.
Sections were crazy. Like, a lot of comments. We had to moderate comments, and we had a separate discussion board. Like, It was like getting nuts. Like I was getting tired of moderating comments.
Yeah, it was different. It was I just remember thinking as we launched it and the team was awful and just trying. We did. I mean, if we're gonna walk down the Reds Army memory lane, might as well. I remember printing out, creating a game. Programs like these fold over game programs that listed stats, and we actually slept to the garden and handed them out.
Yes, we did.
I mean, we were working the pavement. Talk about
we did. We went out there.
RedsArmy.com. Check us out. We want a game, free game program. RedsArmy.com. And we really wow.
Courtesy of the WBZ double sided copier.
right.
Has the statute of limitations run out on abusing office equipment for personal products? I don't know.
Oh, man.
I just remember I printed out like 100 of those things. But yeah, that's right. We went and stood out by the garden at an entrance that no longer exists. We were handing that stuff out. We said and did so much stupid stuff. Like, I'm sure part of it delayed my actual Celtics writing career by years, by people who may have held grudges. But anyway, that's the birth of RedsArmy.com in 2005. Now we are now starting to write about a team that's pretty bad. Like I said, the season is pretty forgettable. The 2005 NBA draft was Gerald Green, Ryan Gomes, and Orion Green. Those Ryan Gomes and Gerald Green are essential players moving forward, eventually being traded away. So that's an important thing to mention. And then the next thing to mention is the 2006 trade, where the Celtics traded Marcus Banks, Mark Blunt, Ricky Davis, Justin Reed, and a second-round pick and a couple of picks for Dwayne Jones, Michael Olowokandi, Wally Szczerbiak, and a first-round pick. So the Celtics...
There was a lot of... Oh, I'm sorry.
No, I was going to say the Celtics have acquired Wally Szczerbiak and former number one overall pick Michael Olowokandi.
Yeah, there were a lot of... bad contracts and bad people going out of town then. Mark Blunt, your favorite.
My favorite guy. Shame to see
Ricky Davis. Ricky Davis, Tommy Heinsohn's favorite. Do you remember the play where Ricky tried to do the between the legs dunk?
Yes.
And he blew it, and then he got his own rebound and put it in anyway? Tommy wanted to take his head off.
That was hilarious. Someone tweeted that. Oh, Jay King tweeted that out.
Yep. That was a classic.
On a breakaway against the Lakers, it was a steal, like someone threw a cross-court pass, and he just stole it. So it was one of those things where no one's momentum is going the Celtics basket way. Like, and Ricky's just, by the time he gets over half court, it's like half the Lakers haven't even reacted yet. So he's got all the time in the world to throw down his dunk. By the way, down 8 to start the second half.
Yeah.
And he tries to do like an East Bay Funk between the legs dunk, and he misses. And yes, the beauty of it is that he is able to go back and get his rebound before anybody comes down from the Lakers. And then on top of it, he throws down a windmill dunk. Like, he doesn't just lay it in. He just doesn't just go up and dunk it like, oh, let me just put this in and move on. He does another like highlight dunk on top of it. So Ricky Davis, someone sent me a pair of Ricky Davis shoes once, and they said, get buckets on the side. Like, that's Ricky Davis. So not sad to see him leave.
No, we had Michael Olowokandi, who was one of the worst first picks of all time. You just have to admit that. I mean, there are a few really bad first draft picks. Kwame Brown, Anthony Bennett come to mind. Michael Olowokandi got picked by the Clippers, right?
Yeah.
That was appropriate. because he didn't turn out to be anything good, nothing good. That was the Paul Pierce, Dirk Nowitzki draft.
Yes.
Right? They were drafted the same year, so those teams have passed them up, but took Michael Olowokandi. This is why they're the Clippers.
Chuck,
This was just one of those sideways trades, though. I mean, we're moving out Blount and Davis, but Zerbiak was on a big contract, and I'm not sure what Olowokandi was making, but I think, you know, and to see Banks be shipped out, who was just a first-round pick, I don't know, 2 years prior, again, there was a lot of names, and it looks like the Celtics ended up with a first-round pick, so there was this, you know, piece to it. But I just remember thinking at the time, there wasn't any sort of optimism around a move like this. I mean, yes, we were happy to see a couple guys go, but, you know, we had some garbage coming in and some overpriced players coming in too. So when you just look at it in the course of the season, you're like, okay, it's another sort of, you know, Ainge can't do anything. You know, he's making these big moves, but I'm going to say this. But there's a lot of patino.
Oh, yeah.
To some of Ainge's earlier moves when he was trying to sort through this roster, there's just like these sideways moves where, granted, he wouldn't draft a player in June and trade him by September, but, you know, Ainge is drafting guys, and then within a year he's moving them out. Now, I'm sure Marcus Banks didn't turn out to be anything, so trading him was the right move, but so much shuffling going on that I think at the time you're wondering, what the hell, what's the master plan here? You know, what is Ainge trying to do?
Yeah. There was a lot of that going on back then, Mike.
He at least, in this particular trade, he at least got two pieces that he later used in the Garnett deal, Wally Zerbiak and the 2009 first round pick. And so that was part of his collecting assets approach. And at least in this instance, you could see some tangible results out of that. The first round pick went to Minnesota later, as we said, and they took Johnny Flynn. They passed up the chance to take Stephen Curry with that pick.
Oops.
Yeah.
Johnny Flynn, another Syracuse flameout. I mean, really, it's really only like a couple of good players that came out of Syracuse, but I'll leave that alone. Yes. So the asset collection thing, like Danny Ainge was at the time, we didn't realize it, but I think like, yeah, he was doing like this guy's a little bit better than that guy. So it was Patino-esque on the surface because it looked the same. Like, it's like, how many moves is this guy going to make? And here's another guy that's like, okay, you signed this guy, now you traded him. You signed this guy, now you trade him. Draft this guy, now you trade him. Like, what the hell is going on? We just keep getting worse. It's not getting any better. Like, what are you doing? And after the progression that we've seen, it's hard for Celtics fans to give this guy the benefit of the doubt. Now, conversely, compare that to after they traded away Pierce and Garnett and all of the moves that he made again. Think about all of the moves that he made again. We'll talk about that when we get to that era. But every single trade, I think we were fine with because we're like, we know what Danny's doing now. He's flipping. He's collecting assets. He's flipping them and he's slowly building towards something. But this time around, same game plan. But we didn't realize at that point, we were just like, what's Doc doing? What's Danny doing? Are we going to have to start over again? What the hell's happening here?
Like, because it wasn't as clear cut because we already had Pierce here, right? So, I mean, there were some pieces in place, obviously Pierce, and then they had Al at this point. So we figure he's one piece. And there were some first round picks in there, right? Tony Allen, this season we're talking about was his first season. There were pieces there. I recall as we were like building around Paul, maybe adding some young pieces, trying to find that sort of that beta to Pierce's alpha. You know what I mean? And right. You know, we knew it wasn't going to be Ricky Davis. So then he's gone. Can Wally be that guy? But the collection, I guess, and timing always matters into this, right? You know, Al is like a high school player. So, but I just remember being a fan thinking, okay, we got Pierce. We just need a really good second player. We have some young players, falsely thinking that maybe we put these guys together and in a couple years we'll have something. But so I didn't really always think of it as merely asset collection because we had Pierce. We had our A. You know, we had our top guy. So and I think that's what's much different than what happened 10 years later when you were clearly stripping everything bare. You still had Pierce and the clock was ticking on him, right? He's 29 this season. So I don't know. That's how I viewed it. Other fans may have looked at it differently, but I was still hoping that they could add through the draft, and maybe a trade or two and become better. But as we know, the following season, they don't become better. They become worse.
Really entering this season, I've said this before, we're not sure what Danny Ainge is doing. We're not sure where Danny Ainge is going with this. And this season and next season, 05, 06, 06, 07, become two really trying seasons. And one of the reasons why we're so focused on what happened before the season is because during the season, nothing of note happens. That season is just a wash and we let it go. But the moves that are being made are leading to something. We didn't know it at the time. We have the benefit of hindsight. But at that moment, we're like, what's Danny doing? Are we going to get a team here? We're going to get a contender. What are we getting out of this? So we're going to continue that tomorrow and get into another bit of the down times before we get into the discussion of the championship. Let me tell you, let you in on how this podcast is recorded and all of that. I get Mike and Chuck together and we just recorded for 3 hours on Monday night. We just talked for 3 hours progressing and I chop it up and give it to you in little half hour chunks so you can get little podcasts. But I want to have the continuity of that discussion. But in 3 hours, we went through 2005, 2006, 2006, 2007, and then that championship season. 3 hours to get through these three seasons. So there's a lot to get through. So subscribe if you haven't subscribed already. We're getting in depth. You don't want to miss this. You're going to get these delivered directly to your device. If you subscribe, follow on Spotify, if that's how you want to listen, go ahead and listen however you want. We're everywhere podcasts exist. If you have subscribed or followed on Spotify, a 5-star rating would be amazing. A good written review would be especially amazing. That helps beyond, you don't even know. I say it helps a lot, but it really, really does help a lot. So please do that and share the podcast. Tell your friends that they should be listening as well. Go to BuiltBar.com. and get the best tasting protein bar on the market with $10 off your first order with the promo code LOCKEDON. All this week, you're getting $5 automatically off every box of protein bars you buy. So if you've bought them before, now you can just go back and stock back up for $5 off each box. If you haven't, buy a few boxes, get that value, $5 off each box, $10 off your first order with the promo code LOCKEDON. Now go tell your smart device to play the latest episode of Rejecting the Screen.